Podcast number 3, a bonus episode of this week featuring none other than the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the king of Newport Richie, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Hall of Fame himself, Uncle Ira, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee D. Kemper is here, and the podcast rolls on, presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the past 60 years. Get to BillCurryFord.com and see these amazing 0% financing offers that are just going to fade away soon. So this is absolutely the time to take advantage. You can set up no payments until the end of the year. So many options. Our friend Sean Sullivan, general manager, you've heard him here as a draft guru, Ira's buddy. He has got it all going on. He will be there Saturday, Friday. You can email him anytime. Get to BillCurryFord.com. Sage, how are you? How's the Ford Escape, the 2020 Cherry Red? And are you going to the beach this weekend?
Well, I drove it today. It's working like a charm. The bun warmers are off. The air conditioning's on. It's riding like smooth as can be. I'm feeling chipper, gentlemen. Things are opening up. One Buck Place, I think, might be open next week. It is time, gentlemen, for Bruce Arians and Clyde Christensen and the crew to put down those golf clubs and pick up a clicker and start watching a little video and diagramming plays for the 2020 Buccaneers. Now, Steve, you just mentioned about going to the beach this weekend. It was a serious, serious consideration. And right before we went on air with this podcast, and I don't know if somebody was kidding, but I just read Twitter, and you guys might have seen this. Pinellas County is lifting any kind of restrictions on the beaches.
They're not going to have cops all over the place with a baton and start tapping on the shoulder very heavily. Like, hey, get away from
me. Well, I don't want a family of 18, sitting down in that blanket next to me, slathering up, playing their loud music. I don't know. I might have to stick to the pool this weekend, Steve, until I see a little social distancing going on, but there's no social distancing on this podcast, gentlemen. We had Marpet, we had Bowles, who knows what we're coming up with next week. And I think the big news of the day is that Isbitz wasn't allowed to ask more than one question. What's going on with these Zoom conferences, Steven?
That's not news, Ira. That's why every time I'm called on, if you noticed, I ask two questions. Every time I'm called on, I ask two questions.
And do you get two answers or do you get one?
I always get two answers. All right, Sage, look, it's not about me. It's about you and Lee and this podcast. And of course, the social distancing elimination at the beach, Ira. This frees you up to use your line to go up to your, some hot 35-year-old and say, hey, baby, you need some help with that suntan lotion. You've been doing that for the last 35 years, Ira, and now you can get back to it.
That worked in 1979, Steve. Have you seen me lately? The Kemper reamed me out the other day for eating on the Zoom conference call. He didn't like the looks of it. It was not particularly attractive. Look, it ain't 79 anymore, gentlemen, and that's a fact that is pounded into me every day.
Everybody can see that Zoom. Flip the coin. Did you want to see, I'll just pick somebody, Leo Haggerty eating and wiping his face and parting his hair? No.
I knew you were going to pick Haggerty. You poor Haggerty. Give the man his due. Give the man his respect.
Good guy. It was like a two-way mirror into your bathroom. Like, come on, man.
Steve, speaking of Bowles, he needs some kind of stimulant because he was on his couch and I thought he was going to fall asleep, Steve.
It sort of felt that way, but he's very, very, very laid back for the media. I think he does it intentionally. But you know what, Ira? I would have thought instantly, while watching him on Zoom, that the way he was sitting there on his couch, I thought you were going to see some Big Storm beer at any moment. And that, of course, is what you will have at your pool this weekend. Tropic Pressure, Florida Ale, the Key Lime Shandy for your wife. Your feet will be up. Cosmo will be floating around on the floaty. You'll be getting that suntan going. Big Storm.
Don't forget the Reuben, Steve. Don't forget the Reuben. It's never far away.
Yeah, the food is fantastic at Big Storm. Their Odessa Tap Room is open for delivery, pickup, 50% in the dining room like every other restaurant. Same thing in Clearwater on 49th Street at the big flagship location. They have outdoor seating there as well. New kitchen, great menu. There's so much more to try there, Ira, than the Reuben. And, of course, the Big Storm beers are flowing all over Florida and beyond. Go to BigStormBrewery.com or go to JoeBucksFan.com like you always do and just click on any one of the Big Storm ads and it'll take you to their Storm Tracker. You can find out what liquor store sells the beer near you or what restaurant and that kind of thing. So it's just a great beer drinking weekend in Florida. This is the time of year that we love. Ira, before we get to Todd Bowles, I got to run this past you because this is really important in a lot of ways, and it's not going to be talked about anywhere else. You know, I wrote something on Monday basically referring to how at Manchester United, Joel Glazer, it's pretty well out there. I wrote this on Monday that it's pretty well out there that he is heavy-handed when it comes to personnel. And one of their top players, the management wanted to move him on the transfer market, which is sort of like the free agent market here or a cross between trading and free agency. And Glazer nixed it, and it was his admitted he was one of his favorite players. And I wrote that, you know, maybe Glazer, since that guy turned his career around and got a lot better since Glazer said, no, we're keeping him, maybe Glazer, it's only natural to think that he'd be more heavy-handed here in football after you have some success doing that. And when your team doesn't make the playoffs for 12 years in a row, you might start thinking, you know what, I don't need to listen to Jason Light on this one kind of thing. I'm going to be here longer than all these guys. But then, Ira, I believe it was Tuesday or Wednesday, The Athletic, the athletic.com, the publication, they wrote like a, I don't know how many thousands of words feature on the 25th anniversary of the Glazers buying Manchester United. No, sorry, 15th anniversary of them buying Manchester United. And in that story, it painted Joel Glazer as a heavy-handed sort of tyrant when it comes to, not that he's a bad, mean guy, but just as a very heavy-handed in personnel and the rest of the Glazers and how they operate. You know, you read that and you think, you know what, they're more involved here with personnel than anybody thinks.
When the Athletic League prides itself on what they call long pieces, they ain't kidding. That thing was like War and Peace over there. I didn't think it would ever end. And it's very, very heavy on the financing angle. It's not so much about the players. There aren't very many players mentioned. No coaching strategy mentioned. They barely mention how Manchester United does on the pitch. It's all about the finances. And it's, Steve, that main point about Joel Glazer from his home near Washington, D.C., where he's got a portrait of a former Man U player hanging in his office. I don't know where they get details like that. They certainly didn't get it from Joel Glazer. And by the way, if people think the Glazers are not very, you know, present from a Buck perspective, and I still can't believe I'm saying this, they've owned this team for 15 years. It's one of the most prestigious sports properties in the globe. Joel Glazer's given one interview, and it was for Manchester United's own TV station. And it was brief, and I believe it was the first year they purchased the club. Since then, crickets, nothing, absolutely nothing. And I watch Premier League games that Manchester United's involved in, and I know their players. You know, I'm starting to pick up a little bit about soccer. Of course, I'm not as cognizant about the technical aspects as apparently Joel Glazer is, but I've picked up a few things about it. They never show the Glazer box, and you would think at least one of them's at the games, one of them maybe. They never interview anybody. They never mention them. It's unbelievable what goes on over there, a club of that stature. But, Steve, I find it hard to believe. I think this guy's name is Martial, the player, and he's been a tremendous underachiever, making plenty of money. And I think he's having a pretty good year this year, and there was some talk about moving him. And according to the story and some other stories, not just this one, Joel Glazer put his size 11 foot down and said, absolutely not. Lee, it is absolutely beyond belief that at this point Joel Glazer is interfering with personnel to that extent. But I will say this, Greg Schiano, and I've never told you guys this, in one of my conversations with him after he was fired, maybe a year later, I got him on the phone briefly. It was a brief discussion. And I mentioned the Glazers, and I'll never forget, he said, they're a lot more involved than anyone believes. And he was talking about the Bucks, obviously. But,
I hope.
You know, Lee, it's a lot easier to think that the Glazers weigh in on professional football, not football, F-U-T-B-O-L, I mean, what the heck? They didn't grow up with soccer. They don't know anything about European football. If that story's true, it's a little troubling.
First off, let me make it clear. I don't give a damn about Manchester United. Right. Don't care. I don't care if they're heavy-handed. I don't care. They never fly over there and see a game. I just it means nothing to me. It's like, you know, cricket in New Delhi. I just don't care. As far as the Bucks, and of course we're not on the inside at One Buck Palace. Yeah, you know, the Glazers like to have an image that they let their people do their thing. That they cut the checks, they stand aside, and the only time they get involved is, you know, when it comes down to finances. And hey, we might be able to get X free agent, but it's going to cost us. Okay, they bring the Glazers in. And it's, Ira, you and I have talked to general managers in the past, other front office people in the past, and they really push that. They, you know, the Glazers, you know, they're hands off. They're very supportive. They let us do our job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's some, anecdotal evidence that they have a little bit more say than what they like to they would like people to perceive. And I guess the best example is when they fired Chucky. You know, they basically said, draft the quarterback. And he said, no, bye. Then that's example A right there.
And, Steve, the point is when the decision is big enough, like hiring a head coach, and they don't have an enviable track record post Chucky on that one, certainly. When the decision's big enough, maybe even drafting Winston, you got to run it past the Glazers. They could have stopped it. There's a suggestion, Steve, you're well aware of this, that maybe Dirk Cutter had turned his back on Winston early in the 2018 season and wanted to stick with Fitzpatrick or go back to Fitzpatrick. And I don't think it's crazy to think that the Glazers had a say in that situation. So if the decision's big enough, I think they do factor in. Certainly they're not drafting Antoine Winfield and being a factor in that. You know what I mean, Steve?
Well, Sage, you know, I know you were curious how they got knowledge of that poster in Joel Glazer's office. I'm a little more scared how you know that he wears a size 11 shoe. I'll just leave it at that.
Some good details. There's some good details there.
That's all about the details, gentlemen.
Sage, you know, I have to at least speculate that maybe the Glazers, if they were not involved in the Michael Bennett non-re-signing back in 2012, one of the franchise's worst possible moves, and I would put that on par with bringing in Josh McCown in 2014 to lead your team to the Super Bowl, maybe they were just stunned by that. Maybe they said enough's enough and started to get more involved after that point. At some point, when you're the owner, year after year after year, and you take all sorts of crap at the owner's meetings, hey, Glazer, you're in the cellar again? You know, that kind of stuff between billionaires. At some point, you realize, you know what? I don't need to pay Mark Dominic and Jason Light to screw this up. I'll screw one or two up myself. So,
well, that kind of talk, Steve, that kind of talk is starting to happen a little bit on the Manchester side. They had some very early success when they purchased the team. Ferguson was still the manager. He's an iconic manager. They kept him, Alex Ferguson, and they were successful. They were winning Premier League titles, Champion League titles, but it hasn't happened recently. And to make it worse, Lee, and I know you don't follow European football, but Manchester City, which is the big rival, obviously, to Manchester United, they are a dominant club. They run away with the league last year, and it's galling, I think, for the Glazers, and the team's going in the wrong direction. But not off the field, Lee, from a marketing perspective, they're doing very well.
All right, when you said, obviously, Man U had a rival, I never even heard of that team before.
Man
City. It wasn't obvious to me.
Yeah,
never
Man
heard
City.
Of it. 20 seconds ago was the first time I ever heard of that. And you know what? I'll forget about it in about 20 seconds, too, because I don't care.
Steve, they fired about three or four coaches since Alex Ferguson retired.
Yeah, who cares
retired.
About that? I was just talking about whether they you think that anything translates that we should believe maybe a little bit more that the Glazers are heavy-handed with the Bucks. We'll keep looking for clues, Ira. We'll keep looking for clues.
There are a couple of clues, although not present day. One of the clues would be, and I'll never forget Al Davis' press conference when they made the trade for Chucky. I will never forget. It was on 620. I mean, it was so big. People at work, it was like the biggest news of the decade, and not sports news, all news. Like, people just stopped. And there was another news event I almost mentioned, but I'm not going to be belligerent and mention the news event. But at any rate, people at work stopped listening to Al Davis's press conference on 6:20 about the trade. And Al Davis said Joel Glazer called him up at, what, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning to finish a trade. And Al Davis told Joel Glazer, and apparently there's some animosity over there. Was. Davis is dead, obviously. Or at least on Davis' side. There was some animosity. And Davis said, have Rich McKay call me in the morning. I'm not talking to you. And Joel Glazer told him, we fired him. Yeah. I'll never forget that. I will never forget that. So if Joel Glazer was the one initiated the trade, that's being involved, I would say. That's being involved. And this isn't an example, although I wish it was. I wish Joel Glazer, or whomever, Brian, when Lovey Smith came on board and he said Darrell Revis can't play for me, Joel Glazer should have gotten involved. He said, now look, I just traded the first round pick for a guy who's going to be in Canton. If you can't make him work, then maybe I hired the right coach, because I can find a better coach a hell of a lot easier than I can find a better corner.
And, Steve, maybe they should have interfered when Les Steckel was relieved of his duties and Tony Dungy hired Clyde Christensen as the coordinator in, I believe it was 01.
Was that a Glazer move? Didn't they force him?
They wanted Steckel out, but they didn't want Clyde Christensen. And they didn't interfere in that.
But didn't they get rid of Shula? That wasn't Dungy's call. That was Shula. Or not Shula's call, but the Glazers basically forced Dungy to fire Shula. It was the Pro Bowl, I believe, I remember.
I believe that's right.
So there's another example of them getting involved.
Hey, Steve, I want to digress for a brief moment, because I saw something today by a writer named Russell Baxter. I believe he's a longtime pro football observer, and I don't know, he opined something about a Mount Rushmore of the Bucks. This will only take a minute, Steve. Don't get nervous.
Was this Chris Russo here?
And he did his Mount Rushmore, and it came out this way: Leroy Selman, Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, and of course the fourth one is always the tough one, because you've got three Hall of Famers there. And he came up with number 40, Mike Allstott. My buddy Rick Goslin, who's very close to Dungy, suggested that Dungy should be the fourth, because if Dungy doesn't get hired, two of those guys don't make the Hall of Fame and the Bucks don't turn around. So I guess my question to you guys is, can you see Allstott being fourth? I think I can see it, because all of a sudden you bring in a fan perspective, and Allstott could be number one on that list. Now, you're leaving out Lynch and Barber, Dungy, and Gruden. And I think most Buck fans would take Gruden over Dungy. Do you guys agree with that? I believe
absolutely.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Steve, who you got at that number four spot?
Well, I don't know if most fans would take Gruden over Dungy. But, you know, again, it comes back to, it's 20-something years ago when Dungy got here, so not everybody has that perspective. A fourth spot? Oh, my gosh, Ira. I don't know. Mount Rushmore?
I like to make you squirm a little bit, Stephen, once in a while.
I don't know. Savvy?
Can you see Allstott? Would you have a problem with that? Would you have a problem with
He's
that?
Not more deserving than Lynch. He's not more deserving than Barber, so I wouldn't go there, no.
Okay. Lee, would you consider fan appeal in that regard?
I'm going with U.S. Grant.
I don't know. I don't think about such things. I don't know. Ira, Todd Bowles in front of the media today. He's talking Bucks. He's not saying much as usual. He's relaxed. He's telling me that Vita Vea is going to play more this year. And maybe, you know, they rotated him out on some of these long drives too much. Maybe, maybe not. But what was your takeaway that we need to know from Todd Bowles?
Well, I asked him two questions. I thought they were good ones. And and I'm going to digress again, gentlemen. You know, sometimes, and maybe I'm getting paranoid in my old age, but sometimes we're in that interview room, and whether Arians is up there or Winston was up there or Bowles, or Leftwich, and I'd ask a question. I'd hear some kind of a shrug, maybe from another member of the media corps once in a while, you know, like a, ah, you know, who cares about that? And then lo and behold, gentlemen, lo and behold, 30 minutes later, I'm all over Twitter because they're tweeting the guy's answer to my supposedly dumb question. And it happens all the time. I burrowed in on playing against Tom Brady, of which I'm going to write a column later this week. Yes, you're getting another column, Izbits. Yes, you are, because I've done a deep dive and a little research. You know, he mentioned nickel, guys, and we've been talking about Winfield a lot and what's going on with that nickel spot. He mentioned bunting, you know, moving inside. I'm still putting my money on Winfield in that. And by the way, just hearing him talk, it struck me unmistakably, and I've said this before about Shaq Barrett. Todd Bowles had a very, very loud voice in the draft room when it came to Antoine Winfield. That does not happen without Todd Bowles. I think he was in on it from the start. I'm not saying he's the guy that brought Winfield to Jason Light's attention, but he was very, very much part of it. I think a lot more than Bruce Arians, and deservedly so. Bowles is charged with bringing out the best in Winfield. Just listening to him talk about the guy, he's really high on Winfield.
Well, Ira, he said a word that you don't often hear NFL people use describing a player. When he said at Winfield, the ball finds him, was his quote.
That's a hell of a quote.
He said, for a college safety, that's rare.
He did.
The
he
word
did say that.
Rare. You do not hear that very often. The only times I've ever heard any NFL person refer to a player or a trade player has as rare. One was Reggie White. Actually, three. One was Reggie White. One was Joe Green. The third one was Leroy Selman.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Chris Conte. Oh, geez, you threw me off.
Ron Wolf. When Ron Wolf worked for the Bucks, he said he was scouting Leroy Selman, and he watched film of him, and he described him as rare. And that, when I heard that word, like, whoa, it's almost like a sacred word. You don't misuse that word if you're an NFL personnel guy or a coach. You don't misuse that word. It's sacred. And so when I heard Bowles say that, that really got my attention. Like, holy smokes.
Steve, that might have been the most incisive moment in the Zoom conferences. The ball finds them. I mean,
it's kind of like like I say about you, Ira, the French fries find you. They find you.
You know, a lot of coaches talk about agility and speed and this and that and instincts, but the ball finds them. I mean, that's Buck fans got to love that quote from Todd Bowles.
Well, Ira, so are you saying that you think sort of at One Buck Place, Todd Bowles didn't tell Jason Light who to draft? When you said that, did you mean that Bruce Arians called Jason Light up to bring him some coffee and said, Jason, Todd's here. He's going to tell you who to pick? Did it go that way?
No, I think it's more likely that Light and the scouts focused a great deal of attention on Winfield. And then at that point, they brought Bowles into the play. And I think Bowles has enough stature at One Buck Place, I'm sure of it, that if he looked at the tape and said, I don't think so, Winfield is not a Buccaneer, nor should he be. And I also think, more importantly, at this moment, he was the driving force behind Shaq Barrett. I'm almost certain of that. And, boy, we know how that one came out.
Yeah, it sure did come out good. Ira, there was a report by Jeff McClain of the Philly Inquirer put out on Twitter that the Eagles have strong interest in Devontae Freeman, and he's weighing other offers, including the Bucks, and they have interest in bringing back LeSean McCoy, but haven't made an offer. Now, then McClain came out a few hours later saying, I shouldn't have said offers from the Bucks, something like just interest, but everything else was true or accurate. So essentially he's reporting that the Buccaneers have strong interest in Devontae Freeman. Who knows what the word offer, quote unquote, really means? Maybe they said, you know, Jason Light, and Arian said to him, Devontae, we'll make you an offer if you're willing to come under where you are right now. We'll talk about an offer. Who knows? But what do you make of that? Now, we've talked about the need for Freeman, or the desire to have him in the mix. He caught 59 balls last year, even though he hasn't run the ball well the last couple of years at all. He caught, I believe, 59 out of 70 targets playing for Dirk Cutter with the Falcons. Experience, two-time Pro Bowler. He's been to the Super Bowl. If they're interested, should they just get this thing done or what?
If they could make this happen, financially speaking, I think it would be wise, because he's a proven guy that can be effective with a Tom Brady. They don't have anybody right now on the roster that is proven in that regard as a pass catcher. They don't. They've got Jones, who showed some slight improvement in that regard, which is that's a low bar, gentlemen, from his rookie year. Now, he improved quite a bit as a runner, but I'm talking about as a pass catcher. They've got the Vaughn kid, the third-round pick, made a few catches at Vanderbilt, has not caught his first NFL pass, has not caught a pass with an NFL linebacker bearing down on him, of which Freeman has done hundreds of times. And, you know, they got a seventh-round pick that's a human pogo stick, and we don't know what to make of him. If the guy returns a couple of punts or kickoffs, I think the Bucks would be happy, and there's no guarantee the guy's even going to make the team. And nobody would go crazy if a seventh-round pick doesn't make the team. So Freeman makes some sense, guys. You know, Lee's been on this case. I don't blame Lee. I think he's making sense. In a year of, whether you want to call it desperation, urgency, whatever label you want to slap on the 2020 Bucks, gentlemen, this is a season like no other, maybe in Buck history. They're about to start a 43-year-old quarterback who's making, you know, a lot of money. And expectations are out the roof. And why not add an experienced pass catcher for a quarterback, Lee, that has proven time and time again he loves to throw to his backs? Why not?
Well, I absolutely agree. I threw it out there. Well, I didn't throw it out there, but Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com, threw it out there. He's talking about Rex Burkhead might be able to pry him from Belichick's clutches. He's only $2.5 million. That's not a whole lot. I know the Bucks don't have a lot of monopoly money to play under the cap. And there's a proven guy. He can catch the ball. He's got better catch yards per catch than any Bucks running back. And oddly enough, he had more yards per carry than any Bucks running back last year. And so I'm all over that. You know, I don't know what it is about our readers, Ira. I don't know if it's low standards or they think a guy wears a Bucks jersey that he's 20 times better than he is. People are like, oh, you hate Ronald Jones. I said, I hate non-production. That's what I hate. I can't stand non-production. So I hate non-production. And if someone's trying to tell me Ronald Jones is a top 20 running back, I want to sit down with them and I want them to show me why he's a top 20 running back. I mean, what is it about, you know, Ronald Jones that he's, you know, this godsend that can never be replaced? I mean, why are Bucks fans, some, not all, so insistent the Bucks have a running attack when proof shows they've had lousy running attacks for years and years and years outside of two, I'm almost ready to say accidents by Duck Martin. Two times out of 6 years he had a good season. Oh boy, let's shoot for that. I just don't understand why people, you know, like Ronald Jones is some teddy bear. You got to go, oh, I love Ronald Jones. Why? Why? What game has he won? What game has he turned around? Why?
And Steve, on top of that, adding Devonta Freeman in and of itself, that doesn't mean that Freeman's going to take a lot of carries away from Ronald Jones. Absolutely. I'm looking at Freeman as a situational player. They don't have anybody on third and seven that has proven adept at catching it and moving the sticks and keeping the Buck defense fresh and giving Brady a fresh set of downs. Let Vaughn take some carries away from Jones. If you run 28 times a game, Vaughn will get some carries. Freeman will get a couple. You know, he didn't run very well, Freeman, the last couple of years, but he can still catch the ball. And, Steve, if it's all about Brady, Why not give him everything he wants?
You just let the guy come in and compete. You know, I mean, may the best man win. I don't know. Maybe Vaughn is like what so many other teams get, which is an excellent back in the third round. But to bring him in with his experience, to be able to compete, the guy was playing with Matt Ryan his whole career. You know, I'd say it this way. He's the kind of veteran you want in there to compete, and a type of player and a guy that they just don't have.
Ira, and he's played in big games, Steve. He's played in big games.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Ira.
Ira, here's one for you real quick about Freeman. And I think you and I are on the same page, Ira. We're not looking for Freeman to come in here and get 15 carries a game. I'm looking at him to replace Dari. You try the last name. I'm not.
I'm not even trying.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at him as. You know, even if a guy, what Dari get? 8 to 10 snaps a year last year? Even, you know, John Kennedy used to say a rising tide lifts all boats. So even if your backup is an improvement, a step up, isn't that not a good thing? Why is that a bad thing? If someone goes down, if Donald Jones goes down, if Vaughn goes down, well, here's an experienced guy. He's experienced running the ball. He's experienced catching the ball. Now, I got to be fair, even though I've been on the Freeman train for a long time, I got to be fair. I don't know if he can play special. And I know, generally speaking, in the NFL, if you can't start, you better play special teams or you're big-time bubble dude. And so that might be part of it. I don't know if he can or does play special teams. But, you know, people that give me flack about Dari, I mean, come on. You're not telling me Freeman is a step up from Dari? I don't care if Freeman only has a quarter tank of gas left. You can't tell me he's not better than Dari or at least equal to.
I'm with you. And Steve, from Freeman's perspective, and we haven't mentioned this, from Freeman's perspective, let's look at it from the other side. I think this is a good spot for him. Correct me if I'm wrong. I say that every podcast, gentlemen, and you guys jump on it. But he's not going to sign with somebody as their primary back unless two guys get hurt. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Those days are over. He's not getting 20 carries with anybody. And he knows that, and his agent should know that. And this would be a good spot for Freeman, Steve.
You would think so. Look, but he could bounce back. He's still 28 years old. I mean, nobody would be surprised if he did. But I get what you're saying. Lee, I will say Dare, and it gets overlooked a lot, Dare had more than 20 snaps a game last year. 20 snaps a game.
Not good.
And he is their special teams captain. He won't go anywhere. But to bring in Freeman as your number four running back or in the mix, your fourth guy, would be a fantastic opportunity. Just find the money. Maybe Joel Glazer will start banging the table or throwing things. Ira,
you hit the nail on the head, Steve. Special teams captain. He's, you know, there you go. That's probably why.
And Ryan Smith. And that's why Ryan Smith's on the team.
Yeah, that's why they brought him back.
Yeah, very much so with Ryan Smith, yeah.
Brought him back for a couple million. All right, Ira, two very quick nuggets, and then we will get out of here. I want to remind everybody the podcast can be listened to. If you missed the two episodes already this week, this is number three. Go on back, and the fun keeps on rolling. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, right at JoeBucksFan.com. Subscribe anywhere, and you can get an alert when it posts, or you can just listen there. A lot of fun. And we love Bill Curry Ford, really. This is the weekend to get it done, the end of the month. Typically, everybody sort of knows in the car business, sometimes you can get some of the best deals then, and it's the weekend, and the 31st is on Sunday. Sean Sullivan, our good friend, is ready to help you, and definitely a family-owned dealership. They care. They have body shop, great service, beautiful property, a lot of room to socially distance. They'll even deliver the car to your home for a test drive or if you buy it online. So get it done, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, just a quick story that was told. I just thought it was so eye-opening and so just such a shocker when you combine it with the Patriot way and what Tom Brady's used to and with just modern society. I thought it was really fascinating. Matt Light, the former Pro Bowl left tackle of the Patriots, played 11 years with Brady. And he told a story on Sirius NFL Radio that when he was a rookie in 2001, his phone rang in a meeting, and Charlie Weiss took it from him and kept it for a whole week. Wouldn't give him back his cell phone. And he sort of basically said that it just sort of completely rocked his world. And that was, you know, 20 years ago. But, you know, that's the kind of discipline that they had going on at the Patriots.
You mean it was during a meeting, Steve?
Yeah.
During a meeting?
His cell phone rang during a meeting, and Charlie Weiss took the phone and kept it for a week. His cell phone.
When Father Bill found out that story, he smiled and said, nice going, Charlie. I think the Bucks are banking on that transferring right here to one Buck place because there's no better example of the discipline. And when I asked Bowles about Brady, he didn't talk about his accuracy. He didn't talk about his arm strength. He said his consistency in his approach. Lee, that's what the first thing that jumped out in Bowles' mind about what makes Brady so unique and so great, arguably the greatest ever. He said he brings the same single-mindedness, whether it's a practice in August or a playoff game in late January. It never wavers, the focus, the discipline. He's not going to brook any nonsense, Lee. And let's be honest, there has been some nonsense around one Buck place. I know everybody talks about how tight the locker room is, but we're in there, and I don't think the focus is necessarily as good as it could be, and the proof's in the standings, guys. There's that intangible from Brady. Lee, it's a big part of the reason the Bucks signed Brady.
So you're not hip with the basketball goal and the ping pong table?
I thought the ping pong thing got out of control. Now, that's not the reason they went 5-11 2 years ago. It's not. But I think it's an indication. So you're not taking it as seriously as you should.
Well, I wrote it up on Joe Bucks Fan. Maybe you didn't see it. It was a few weeks ago. Albert Breer, from his days as a Patriots writer, relayed the story that years ago in the Patriots locker room, they had a ping pong table in the Patriots locker room. Danny Amendola was the resident champ, and Brady considered himself a great ping pong player, and he challenged Amendola. They played. Amendola kicked his ass. Brady threw the paddle at him, fired it right by his head. I don't think the ping pong's a big deal, but you know, it's all about the bigger and broader discipline. But I love that Brady story. Paddle tossing.
Okay, well, considering Brady's accuracy, I'm surprised he didn't nail him in the side of the head. And
last one, guys, because I'm on full Peyton Manning watch as far as being the Buccaneers' next general manager.
Boy, you're like a dog with a bone with that, Steven. You will not get off that.
Well,
you will not.
There's been speculation for years that he wants to do that, and the Glazers love splash, and there'd be no bigger splash than Peyton Manning. And we've all witnessed in the last few weeks how tight he is with Tom Brady. We already know how tight he is with Arians and with Clyde Christensen. And I bring this up because Manning was asked on Rich Eisen's show. He was asked about getting into broadcasting next year. And Manning said, you know what? I'm not going to say no, but I don't really think so. He said, I love going to games. He said he loves being a fan, which I thought was interesting. He said he still goes to every single Broncos game and watches every single Colts game. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, he's probably hanging out with John Elway regularly and, you know, learning from that ex-quarterback and understanding what the Broncos are doing and his connections now with Brady and Arians. I don't know. It just feels, I just smell it, Ira.
I can say this, Steve, and I don't know if this helps your cause, but he happens to be very tight with John Lynch. They have a strong bond together. I've got some great quotes from Manning on John Lynch that I've brought into the room over the years. He talks at length about John Lynch. Lynch has talked to me about Manning. They're very close. And you got to think the startling success of John Lynch in the other Bay Area has caught Manning's attention. You know, he's not a guy with a lot of self-doubt, but if he ever needed any prodding that he could get this job done, he looks at Lynch and sees a man in the Super Bowl in year three. Year two was wiped out by a quarterback going down. So I'm giving him a pass. In reality, it's like a second year. And he came within 8 minutes of winning it all. So I think that kind of reinforces Manning's future endeavors. Steve, I'm not disagreeing what Manning might want to do down the line, but I don't see necessarily connections between Manning and the Glazers or One Buck Place. I think you're looking at a post-Bruce Arians scenario, post-Jason Light perhaps, and certainly post-Brady. So, you know, where's this connection with Brady fit in if Brady's retired? I don't necessarily see Manning linked with the Bucks. What's the connection with the Bucks, Steve?
I already said he's tight with Arians, tight with Christensen, tight with Brady if he's interested in getting in the game. I thought you sort of threw in an extra wrinkle there that John Lynch would vouch for the Bucks organization as being good guys. And I don't think Manning is an either-or situation with Jason Light. I think if the Glazers could get their hands on Peyton Manning and bring him into the organization, they would love it.
Like a vice president of football operations, which is a lot of people wanted some time ago.
Yeah, whatever they call him, sure.
And he'd leapfrog Derek Brooks in the process, gentlemen. I got to get a plug in for my man Brooks. You knew that.
Well,
you knew
here's something to whet Steve's appetite. And, you know, you mentioned Peyton Manning, you mentioned John Elway. You guys probably know this, but you know who was a significant factor, like a liaison of sorts, to transfer Lynch's TV skills into a front office position? John Elway.
Mm.
Elway kind of took him under his wing, showed him the ropes.
Well, I think he did too good a job because Elway's star is fading a little bit in Denver. They haven't
because
been a factor.
Because of one reason, that you can't find a quarterback. But maybe Drew Locke is that guy.
Yeah, maybe. They got a pretty good defense, Denver. Got pretty good defense, and they're on the Bucs schedule.
Good defensive coach.
All right, Ira, we'll head out on that. And, of course, we've got more coming up next week on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Ira, since you're going to be at home, it's okay. You can keep your shirt off. You can eat as much as you want. And you'll get to the beach next weekend.
Steve, I can't wait that we do a live podcast, maybe in the next few weeks, at Big Storm Brewery. You pick the location. Odessa or Clearwater, I'll travel. Like the Bucks, I travel well, and I can't wait to try a different sandwich. Reuben is out of this world, but they got a big menu, and I want to try some other stuff. Wash it down with a little tropic pressure, gentlemen. Lee, I might even pick up the check. Now that would be the biggest surprise of all, Lee.